final sentence series, sentence speaker series session. Today's speaker is Janet McIntosh. I'm really glad to have her here and introduce her. Janet is a member of West Point Great Presbyterian Church. She graduated Vancouver School of Theology some years ago, but she was not ordained, but chose to be active lay leader. And she has a passion, especially she has a passion for justice work. She's a representative of Kairos national and regional representative. And you remember that last year we have a Truth and Reconciliation special event in Vancouver. She was so active. I participated in canoe, dragon canoe sailing, and also, many of you helped the pancake, making pancake. It's pancakes. So cupcakes. So she organized both. It's very, very hard work, but then she made a great effort to make it happen. And we have some connections. Same as Bruce, who shared about the Oiko credit, she is a missionary's daughter. Missionaries who worked in Korean Japanese church in Japan, and she was born in Japan, and her father was also very passionate minister and also passionate social activist, but she will I will not say about that, and she will put her life story to today's presentation. Welcome, Janet.
Oh. Hello? No. Oh, okay. Wow. This is pretty high tech. Good evening. Hello. My name is Janet McIntosh. I'd like to begin by first of all acknowledging that we are on unceded Coast Salish Territories land and grateful for the hospitality we receive as neighbors and friends. I'm very glad to have been invited to this evening's gathering. I know Lent is a reflective time. It's a time for some for discerning, for some mourning, for some just can't wait to get to Easter. It's a time of anticipation. I was asked to speak. Come and sit over here, Yoko. Come and sit with us. And in case you're wondering, I put those letterings today in pink because it's Pink Day, National Pink Day for anti-bullying and homophobia, and in solidarity with a lot of young people who are especially remembering this day within their school systems. So Yoko asked me to speak freely about my justice work with my theological and spiritual reflection for 30 minutes. Wow, what an open invitation. And for those of you who know me in the Kairos circles, you're wondering, what's she going to talk about? Is it going to be mining? Is it going to be migrant justice? Is it going to be indigenous rights or sustainability? Well, all. How's that? Because they do overlap. In February, a number of us were there for a Richmond and Vancouver Kairos groups, together with friends with the Coalition for Migrant Workers Justice, hosted a workshop, Justice Matters, From Root Causes to Action, with the intent to find common ground by identifying root causes and develop some direction for joint action. We asked people to sit at one of the five issues tables. Housing. Oh, sorry. Do I need? Oh, you're good? Okay. So these were the five issues we grouped ourselves in, and we went to a table to address issues of housing, poverty, resource extraction, indigenous rights, and migrant workers' rights. First, we were to identify what the problem is. Then, who and what is affected by that issue. And third, what the root causes were. As groups presented later on, it became very clear how there were interconnections. And those interconnections became more obvious as we sort of built like a pyramid, an iceberg, where those root causes were overlapping. And the repeated words, such as capitalism, colonialism, greed, racism, globalization, power, some named fear. Those were named. And we feel very strongly as the organizers of that workshop that by naming, we can then move forward. It builds momentum to at least sit with those words, ask ourselves what they mean to us, how it's reflected in our daily lives, in our global economics systems, in our churches, in our society. Then we talked about how we might move forward. And in that, we talked about living out our values, taking risks, doing some self-reflection, collaborating, bridging differences, and getting out of our silos, mobilizing young people, and fostering interdisciplinarity and shared consciousness. Those were most, but not all, of the ideas that were given. These ideas need to be made more specific for action, and it is something that we hope to do at another gathering sometime in the near future. Now, if I could ask just for a moment for you to take 2 minutes to speak with your neighbor about what is an existing justice issue that you are concerned about, that you are engaged with, or you're wondering about? And are there any identifiable connections as you compare notes with your neighbor? Take 2 minutes to do so. Oh, yeah. Can we go back 2 slides? Okay. Any interesting discoveries or thoughts that you'd like to share? We have a microphone. Maggie? Here. Okay. I just overheard you say, talking about one issue just sort of rolls into another, and there's often a snowball effect.
Well, yep. Good and bad.
Yeah. So yes.
After you solve one or get on the track of one, you start to see that snowball.
Mm-hmm.
Works both ways.
Yep. Yep. Thank you. Any thoughts? It's okay. We'll continue. No, I'm good, Yoko. Did you want to say something? No, good. We're good.
Well, we were just talking a little bit about the right to live, to have a housing. If it's just and. On the other hand, it's not easy to how to approach it. So mm-hmm. We didn't really come to any conclusion. Sorry, we just brought it up.
Okay, thank you. Well, keep holding those thoughts. We'll walk through. Well, for me, it was experience that first helped me connect environment with human health and well-being. Especially clean water. During a Canada World Youth Exchange to a small village in southeast Sulawesi, Indonesia, in my late teens. Experience during the 4 months there was enough to change my interest from medicine to environmental health, health promotion, and epidemiology. It was also then that I found a new friend in a co-participant who was from a First Nations community in Saskatchewan. But it wasn't until later, during my studies in university, that I learned about the public health concerns in First Nations communities and the inequities in health and education. The words of Chief Seattle in his speech, the reference he makes to interconnectedness, is what helped me shift perspective to a better understanding for a more sustainable life for all. Today and in the future, for our children's children. This is only but an excerpt, this we know. The earth does not belong to us, we belong to the earth. This we know. All things are connected like the blood that unites us. We do not weave the web of life, we are merely a strand in it. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. Came from a book illustrated by Susan Jeffers, a book that was given to me at one of the conferences I attended years back. And I've treasured it ever since. The image of a web, God's hand, not ours, in it. The detail, the magnificence, the beauty, a small reminder of the day-to-day life. A miracle in the making every day can capture us, amaze us, and gives us an image of hope. After some years in sustainability research, having children, and being active in church life, I've been drawn to the teachings of John Cobb Jr., Herman Daly, Ruth Page, and Larry Rasmussen, and studied under Dr. Sally McFaig in ecotheology, environmental ethics, ecological economics, and process theology, for finding ways to redefine and communicate the theological teachings around God's creation and our relationship to God and one another. Such teachings and others come together in Kairos's sustainability circle, for example, which I co-convene. Able to reflect theologically with ecumenical partners on eco-justice matters to enable action, including ethical reflections on current issues affecting us. For example, the Northern Gateway Pipeline. There are 7 questions that we identified in naming an issue, and trying to discern how we ethically move through and challenge ourselves to sort of recognize what our call is in response. Specifically to the Northern Gateway Pipeline, we identified two key priorities for Canada: that we must affirm Indigenous people's rights for self-determination, and that we have a much-needed, just, clean, and sustainable energy strategy. What are the facts? Many of us know them. 1,172 kilometers of pipeline carrying up to 552,000 barrels a day. The dangers around Hecate Strait, the increased extraction of bitumen and combustion of oil, not to mention water usage and pollutants. Which communities does this affect? Well, many, direct or indirect. Under the Save the Fraser Declaration, there were 106 First Nations signatures, and more than 60 First Nations communities are needed to be consulted due to the treaty rights. So why does this issue matter to us? Well, as part of God's creation, as stewards of God's creation, caring for creation is part of our Christian mandate. It's part of our role. Also, we know what covenant relationships are, which means we must treat with respect some of the treaties that have been signed over the years. What can guide our decision making? Some of our church covenants are agreements that have been and proclamations or statements that have come from different churches, and policies, moving away from fossil fuels towards energy efficiency, are some. And what might be the best options for response in this situation? Continuing dialogue with First Nations communities, writing letters to the Ministry of Aboriginal Affairs, Natural Resources, the Environment, and just continuing to be open for dialogue and support if needed. Next, please. Well, Kairos certainly knows about taking risks. And as you know, we are not going away. If you don't know about this history, back in 2009, funding from the Canadian International Development Agency was suddenly cut at the midnight hour, after 37 years of good ties and relations. We were one of the first non-government organizations to suffer some other cuts that followed. Well, I've been reintroduced to Doug Hammarskjöld. Some of you may know that name. He was a second United Nations Secretary General between the years of 1953 to 1961, when his plane that he was on, 1961, tragically was hit and he died on mission over Zimbabwe, I believe. A man of deep faith, integrity, and genuine openness to people of other cultures. He wrote, "It is a sign of the highest culture to be really capable of listening, learning, and therefore also responding in a way which helps the less favored ones." Going back to our interconnectedness, God and creation, Hammarskjöld's interest in creation is above all to accentuate that God's creation is perpetual, and that in its steady continuation, it stands as the very opposite of chaos. So shall the world be created each morning anew, forgiven, in thee, by thee. God is always creating and will not cease to create until God's kingdom is realized. We are part of that story. You and I. It is with this grounding of hope and promise that we are enabled to continue in our struggles for justice. We read the IPCC reports, the UN Human Development Report, the report from the World Summit for Social Development in Copenhagen, and many others, and are bombarded with new information, facts, and figures almost daily. Similarly, from one end of the earth to the other with our technology, news and information connects us to loved ones, friends, and strangers, sometimes for better, sometimes for worse. We experience this through international partnerships. The Women of Courage tours to Colombia and Congo, study tours to Guatemala, and like the one I was in Mexico, investigating labor and indigenous rights issues around mining. We go, we send Canadians, and learn from what we see and hear. We listen and respond by bringing back their stories. This is a picture of the counterparts, both Canadian and Mexican, when we were gathered together in Mexico City. Many of the Mexican personnel are lawyers and have worked closely with communities that have struggled in their rights, either to organize or to ensure that they were working under good health, healthy and safe conditions. Choosing life over mining was the expression that we walked into as we visited the community of San Jose del Progreso, where the mining company Fortuna Silver operates. This is a flag of resistance for the Coordinating Committee of the United Peoples of the Octalan Valley, with two portraits of two activists killed. This is a picture of Bernard, of Andre, a brother of Bernardo, who was killed. A widow of another Bernardo in the village, who was also accidentally killed. Rosalinda, the cousin of Bernardo Vasquez, who is a member of the Colectivo, and also was struck by a bullet. And then Rosalinda's mother, supportive and loving, living with fear of losing her daughter in this struggle. So why does this have to be like this, where families and communities are divided? And literally that community was. There were red taxis and blue taxis for those who are opposed and for those who are supporting. Divided. And the ones who are brave enough to question and protect their rights are being targeted. Many people are buried in their struggles, and Canada has a hand in this, with 75% of the world's mining and mineral exploration companies being headquartered in Canada, with tax shelters and special protections. And 40% of the world's mineral exploration capital being raised on Canadian stock exchanges. Canadian companies operating internationally face few human rights and environmental requirements under Canadian law, and the Canadian government supports and promotes such trade, now with exploration privilege attached to CETA funding. I like to believe that Canada is uniquely positioned to become an international leader in responsible natural resource development. But as we know, that opportunity, I think, is quickly slipping away. I remain prayerful and grateful for people like Padre Martin Octavio Garcia Ortiz, who risked his life for the wanting of information, to be able to discern what informed consent might look like for members of his parish and the community. Seeking a better life for yourself and your family is something people around the world have done for generations. What about you? What about me? Where have we migrated from? How many generations ago? You can turn the slides, this set of slides off. Thank you. In 2008 and 2009, and for the first time in Canadian history, the number of migrant workers entering Canada outnumbered the number of migrants coming in as permanent residents. Today, there are approximately 300,000 migrant workers in all of Canada. On Sunday, the Coalition for Migrant Workers Justice hosted an event by showing the Canadian film, The End of My Immigration, which sparked much interest and discussion. No longer can we assume that all workers making a livelihood here in our midst are here to stay. Many are temporary, here for a period of 10 months to 2 years, up to a maximum of 4, with only people in the Living Caregiver Program, one of 62 different temporary foreign worker programs, able to apply for permanent residency. Another wake-up call for all Canadians is that our federal immigration policy is not the policy we may remember from the late 50s to mid-2000. Tied to one employer during their stay, many are caught in a system dependent on growth, exploitation, and profit for more. The privatization of immigration is happening right now, and we're all caught in it. It's needing to be fixed. So, take a moment and think, what was your first awakening to an injustice? Where were you? How old were you? Who or what was being affected? And can you describe any emotions? Take a moment. Would anybody like to share? Don't be shy. It's good to be woken up once in a while. Maggie?
I'll say this one because I was thinking about it earlier. When I had my very, very first day of school, I was in a very small resource town in northern Ontario. And I was scared to go to school for the first time, but I had friends. And I arrived at the school, and it was a school grades 1 to 12. And so there were some really big, scary kids. But over in a corner of the playground were, I don't know, in my recollection, 5 to 7 big girls, and they looked at least as scared as I was. And so I asked one of my friends why, and she said, "Those are the Indian girls. They're going to let them go to school with us this year, but not the boys. They're savage."
Hmm.
So I had the right to go to school, and they didn't. And their brothers, I grew up with all my brothers, their brothers couldn't come.
Hmm. Anybody else like to share?
I have a sense of justice, yes. When I was grade 11 student, I had a conversation with my close friend about the coming election. And she said, "I don't have a right to vote." "Why?" "Because I am Korean Japanese." She used her Japanese name, so I didn't know. We are very close friends. We did project together, we played together, so many fun things together, but I didn't know she was Korean Japanese. So I deeply got shocked and how my capacity to think about and imagine, you know, the people's situation, different people's situation, and people and minority people's situation. So Japan is a country of assimilation. So everybody, we have some minority people, but they are really well assimilated. So that's that time. Yeah, to think about that.
Oh, you keep that. Yes. Thank you. Often, most notable injustices in our minds and hearts are personal. It's not unusual to be angry. It often shapes us into action, or at least beginning to ask questions. Born and raised internationally with 3 cultures of influence, Canadian, Japanese, and Korean in Japan, my awareness started there with difference, formally identified in grade 1 in the way I was to write my name in katakana, not hiragana, because I was a foreigner. Soon, I learned both sides of the coin for racial prejudice, as I often experienced favoritism as being a white person, and my adopted Korean sister experienced teasing and discrimination and bullying. In Japanese society, differences were always noted, valuing conformity, and as a family, we noticed our Korean friends, whom my parents were missionary partners with over the years, that they were struggling with housing, education opportunities, and employment opportunities. It was unfair and it was unjust for my Korean friends who were born in Japan, just like me, without Japanese citizenship, but with no home to return to. Japan is their home. In my parents' eyes, Canada was always home, and we were visitors, but that doesn't mean we were treated by our friends that way. We have long-lasting ties and friendships, coming full circle now into another generation. So as a visitor or a newcomer, how should we live? Perhaps we can all start by learning the ways or culture and be respectful to one another. Anything else? Any thoughts? A few of us Kairos friends from BC traveled to Edmonton to be present and bear witness at the 7th and final Truth and Reconciliation Commission national event, late March. I was glad we went. The road trip itself, for forming closer friendships, but also hearing survivors' stories, various expressions of reconciliation, celebrating Indigenous healing through arts and music, and hearing honorary witnesses' commitments and work already begun to further healing and reconciliation. The beauty and respect of culture, elders, the land, the concern for the next generations are very real in many places, but visibly noticeable among our Indigenous peoples, especially when all gathered together. It was beautiful, encouraging, and empowering. It was announced that the Alberta Ministry of Education will be making the history of Indian residential schools mandatory for all kindergarten to grade 12 students. And the mayor of Edmonton declared their year of reconciliation at the opening of the Truth and Reconciliation ceremonies. The TRC has been an opening for many of us to begin dialoguing with one another about our own history here in Canada. I am glad that it has happened, but I am also left with many, many questions. The truth may be told, but as Justice Murray St. Clair, the chair of the TRC, reminded us, reconciliation is a lot harder. This is where we must come together. So what does reconciliation look like? And to many of us here attending churches, we hear about reconciliation ministry. Well, what might that be? The questions I'm still going through my mind is primarily the difference in language between Alberta, where reference was made several times about people being treaty people, and how clearly distinguished in their map of Alberta the treaty lines are, and how many First Nations are in each of the treaties. Here in BC, reference to treaty is not made in that same way, and I want to learn a little more about understanding what treaty rights are, what treaties do. You go to the BC Aboriginal Affairs website, I think Ministry of Aboriginal Relations speaks of creating certainty and opportunity through treaties, bringing together First Nations, British Columbia, and Canada to establish certainty over rights to Crown land and resources through the negotiation of treaties. There's, I think, a handful of communities that have treaties, but are currently there are many that are being negotiated. So it's something to keep an eye out for and for us to be informed about, I think, to learn from and to support where support might be needed. So here we are in Lent, about to enter Holy Week, taking time to reflect on our past, our wrongdoings, including our complacency. What might our vision be for a life-giving and sustaining society? May the dark days pass and our differences be reconciled. May we walk in our ministry of reconciliation together, choosing life and shining God's light. After all, God is in creation, creating you, creating me, creating us each and every day. Thank you, God, our Creator, the Great Spirit, the Holy One, for Easter. Lastly, I'd like to leave you with Nat Diat's video message of encouragement from the Truth and Reconciliation in Vancouver. This is where we see reciprocated what we have typically thought of people in the North providing for people of the South, and how that now is changing, where her voice brought strength, courage, and encouragement to the First Nations people attending the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Thank you.
She comes to us not new to the social justice movement. She is a victim and an orphan of the armed conflict in Guatemala in the 1980s. So we thank you and welcome you very much, Nati.
Tuve la oportunidad de estar en el evento sobre verdad y reconciliación en Vancouver y escuchando la historia de los hombres y mujeres que daban su testimonio sobre los golpes, sobre las violaciones sexuales, sobre el despojarles de su familia, también el hecho de separar a su familia con el ánimo de terminar a los pueblos indígenas. Y es lo mismo que está sucediendo en Guatemala. Y veo que hay mucha coincidencia de todos los sufrimientos que hemos pasado a los pueblos en Guatemala. Los pueblos mayas es la misma historia, solo que de diferente forma.
And I join with Indigenous peoples of Canada to say that we Indigenous peoples in the world are many. And despite the great pain, Indigenous people are still alive and still resisting. As it was said in the inauguration of this process of truth and reconciliation, this is the beginning of a huge task. It is the beginning of truth, and reconciliation is yet to be built.
Los pueblos indígenas se les ha despojado de su idioma, de su traje, de su identidad, porque hay toda una política de cambiar a las personas. Yo no sé qué tanto les molesta a los pueblos, a los otros pueblos o a los empresarios más que todo, ¿verdad? Porque son ellos quienes generan estas políticas de explotación. ¿Qué es lo que les molesta de los pueblos indígenas? Conozco indígenas de varios países y tenemos las mismas visiones con respecto a la vida, porque nosotros no somos superiores a la naturaleza, sino somos parte de ella. Entonces, y yo creo que esa visión también nos ha hecho llevar a que protejamos de mejor manera la madre naturaleza. Yo creo que eso molesta y choca con el modelo económico, y por eso es que hay tantas violaciones y en la actualidad no se reconoce el derecho de los pueblos indígenas. Y yo creo que son buenos procesos que se están iniciando para hablar sobre la verdad de lo que está pasando, no solo en Vancouver, en todo Canadá, en todo el mundo. Yo pues esperaría que este proceso de verdad y reconciliación que está llevando Canadá dé pasos hacia cambios que sean emancipadores, ¿verdad?, que transformen y que se empiece a escribir una nueva historia en Canadá.
So, some questions, discussion. I have materials that I have books here, but also a little booklet of information of current events or things that are coming up that may interest you. You were mentioning housing. Well, now here in the Metro Vancouver area, there's been a new gathering, or I think an alliance. It's called the Metro Vancouver Alliance, which has brought together faith groups, government or non-governmental organizations or community groups with labor union groups who are all wanting to identify key issues that they could put their energy together in influencing policy and decision-making within the Metro Vancouver area. And the four issues that they identified that they would like to work with: one is housing, another is poverty, third being transit, and they've honed in on social isolation. Loneliness was something that was reported in the Vancouver Foundation report, I think it was earlier this year, and it's something that is now being recognized. And all those four issues, if you think about, they're interconnected as well. And you could choose to sit and with your iPod in transit, or choose to engage with a neighbor in conversation sitting beside you. We all can sort of handle it differently. But that has what they call a research and action group for each of those four issues. And they're inviting people to join. It is organization-based, so Kairos Richmond, Kairos Vancouver, jointly as Metro Vancouver Kairos, has signed on in support. So if you're interested, that's the way to identify yourself if you wish. Or if Gilmore Park United, through a social justice concern and group, may wish to identify that one of those issues and really focus over this next year and collaborate together, that might be another way to go too. But I just thought I'd let you know that I have some information out there too for you to take a look at. Now, do you have any questions? Shall we... we could put the ethical framework... Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Hello. Hello. I've got a question.
Mm-hmm.
How can we have change unless, if we keep on voting for the same kind of governments, mm-hmm. that all they care about is big oil?
Mm-hmm.
And people will keep voting for the people keep voting for them. They don't vote for the Green Party.
No.
They don't vote for the NDP. They vote for these extreme right wing mm-hmm. people. So how are we going to change it unless we change our voting practices to begin with?
Well, we can go off the record. I think you're the election process itself. I mean, we look at maybe one of our goals might be to get people out to vote. Isn't that an issue as well? So at the
50%,
yeah. So I think there's education needed there, and for the last provincial election, I was advocating, as young people were, I have a daughter who was voting for her very first time, and so the two of us volunteered at one of the poll stations, and I just wanted her to have a sense of what goes on, and that brought along five of her friends to vote. Because they were interested in knowing what we were doing. But it's just, you know, we got to be creative in trying to find out how to engage our young people. Apathy can be the biggest, I think, challenge in this. And, well, what difference can I make? Really, is my vote going to really matter? Once we go down that path, then it challenges the entire system and the democracy that we wish to see demonstrated more in our systems and our policies and reflected on how we wish. So that's a very good question. But I think we should try to aim to get people out to vote and have your conversations, political, non-political, whatever, wherever. Start there. But it is something in the past Kairos has engaged in around even outlining what the different platforms are for each of the political parties. So remaining neutral, but looking at key items of concern. So if we were to go with the lens of those four issues, for example, and say, okay, well, here's what this party is saying, this is what this party is saying. And so there's a way to do an analysis. And I think that's been the challenge too, because party politics, I'm now at the place of saying, well, so you want money for your party? Now, why do you want money for your party? Right? The assumption made from the traditional framework of membership-based alliance, even, I think now has to be brought to question, because we're not, the younger people aren't joiners necessarily. So what does that mean? And this whole idea of being members for life in a particular political party is a very foreign concept. So we shouldn't assume from the get-go when a canvasser is calling, oh yeah, I know what that is. Sure, I'll give you a check. I mean, it's not going to be that easy. So I think there is a real culture shift that we need to address as well. And I think some of the traditional established institutions have to recognize that too. My 2 cents worth. Yes, Deneen.
One thing that I've noticed is, couldn't figure out why I was coming across louder than I thought I was, is Lead Now is a young group of people that are definitely speaking in the same voice as I do. I mean, everything pretty near that comes across Facebook and that I read about is exactly what I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they have got the people, a lot of people between 20 and 40, interested, and they've organized across Canada looking at issues and seeing what they can do about the next election. So I'm quite interested in seeing where that goes, mm-hmm. because of knowing some of the people that are Christians that are working in that organization.
Thank you, Deneen, for bringing that up. Yes, it is an organization that is really being led by the younger generation, concerned about the future of Canada and, yeah, environment and many, many things.
One of the things that Winnie mentioned to me earlier was the new system where some people may be getting cut off and not allowed to vote. You've probably heard about this if you listen to CBC or, you know, read the papers as to new rules and regulations.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Those are, yeah. These systems, well, the system itself is changing from within. And, we have to pay attention. It, things are getting changed, too. before we know it. Yeah, thank you for that. Mm-hmm. On this subject, I'm curious. Do you find that the information that you get, I find that we as citizens now have to develop more filters about how to discern the information that is coming through the internet, and how do you identify that it is a true source, that it is quantifiable, all the traditional ways of measuring good information, reliable information, is getting, I think, very, it's hard to decipher as a reader on the internet. And I'm just wondering if that is something that challenges you as well, or do you already know what key sources, reliable sources, like what are some of your reliable sources? Is it CBC? CBC? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. This electoral thing, there have been several people in high places that have just come up and said this is wrong. But people in higher places, whether they're going to listen to me, that's to be seen.
Or don't. Well, I can give you a little reflection from my daughter who attended what they call Encounter Canada, a great program to initiate high school students in giving a one-week introduction to how Parliament works. And it's theme-based, so she chose the one and only Environment Week. Came back appalled at the behavior during question period. And she said, "Mom, you wouldn't let us talk like that. How do they get away with it?" So that was from a 17-year-old's eyes.
Without appearing to be too cynical, I have real concerns about the sincerity of government at any level looking for getting input for public opinion when they've already made up their mind and they're intangible, they're not going to change their mind. And it's really tokenism. And this, the lack of sincerity that there is around that whole process.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We have waves, I think, of cynicism that sort of engulf us sometimes. But then I just have to keep on hoping that, well, maybe this little piece might do something. Maybe this. So, for example, as the deadline was approaching for the letters to be submitted for Kinder Morgan, I called the BC regional coordinator. "Are you going to write something?" "I think I will, from Metro Vancouver." "Okay, so what will you say?" We connect. and let's write together. Okay, so she submitted and I submitted. We both have been okayed to submit as commenter on behalf of the Metro Vancouver area, Kairos, and Janet also for the BC Kairos as well. So what that may do, not sure. However, it's an exercise in what I still have to believe is there for us to be able to express concern and hopefully have it noted. And if there's enough of us making that comment or stating those concerns, maybe somebody at the other end will see light and make a decision based on something other than the traditionally defined economics and the rules of economics and profit. And we have to, I think those are the challenges, and that's where groups like this and coming together like this to talk about some challenging issues once in a while is necessary to be able to find voice again rather than being bombarded and being buried underneath all the information that you don't know what to do with. So for clarity of mind and for clarity of heart, I would encourage you to continue to meet like this from time to time and have some meaningful conversations around issues that are deep in your heart that matter to you, because it matters. And we have to continue to care and hope.
So can I suggest to move that to the coffee and tea, okay, and continue the conversation if you know, okay, you have time. And thank you so much, Janet, for sharing your passion and your work, and also you touched us with through your source of the passion for justice. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Just last word, and I had the pleasure of attending the worship, and you read about justice as a public face of God's love. I'll take that home with me. Thank you very much for that gift. Go in peace.